Now, in Honduras, conservatives justify the coup in part by citing fears that President Zelaya would align the country with the Castro government in Cuba. Ironically, this comes at a time when relations between the U.S. and Cuba seem to be warming. The U.S. government dispatched a senior diplomat to the island recently to participate in talks about the postal service between Cuba and the U.S. That postal service was suspended back in 1963, but the trip didn't stop there. Bisa Williams stayed in Cuba. We'll find out what she did when she was there. Joining us to talk about this is NPR correspondent Tom Gelton, who's been reporting and writing about Cuba for more than a decade. Welcome.
Hi, Michelle.
So who is this diplomat, and who did she meet with? Why was she sent, and what did she do when she was there?
Bisa Williams is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs. She's one, of course, of several deputy assistants in that bureau. But Cuba is part of her jurisdiction, as it were. And I think what's significant is that she is the highest ranking U.S. diplomat to go to Cuba on an official visit in some time. One. Two, she did not simply confine her visit, as you suggested, to the items on her official agenda. Her official agenda items were, as you said, to discuss the resumption of direct mail service between Cuba and the United States. She was accompanied by officials from the U.S. Postal Service. There's a lot of technical things that have to be worked out for that to happen. The other thing she addressed officially were the migration talks. Cuba and the United States have been having migration talks since 1994, although since 2004, under the administration of George W. Bush, those talks were canceled as a result of the downgrading of U.S.-Cuba relations. They're back again now, and the next talks are scheduled for December. So she was there to discuss that as well. Now, those were the official items, but she then stayed, as you say. She stayed for 6 days in Cuba, and she did things that I haven't heard of a U.S. diplomat in Cuba doing in years and years and years. She went out to a part of Cuba that has been very affected by hurricanes, accompanied by Cuban government officials, toured the area. She went to an agricultural facility, something that Cubans are very proud of. This is not the kind of thing that an American diplomat would do. To me, Michelle, the most intriguing thing she did was on September 20th, she went to, the Juanes concert in Havana. The Colombian singer who had this big sort of concert for peace in Havana, she went there as for her own interest.
As a guest. The other thing that she did, and it was interesting how the reporting on this came out. Initially, it was not confirmed that she had done this,
right. But
she met with 15 prominent dissidents at the U.S. interest section, and three of them told the Associated Press, and three of them, several of these people were people who have previously spent time in jail for their political views. And how was this accomplished, and why is this important?
Well, she met with them, as you say, she met with them at the U.S. diplomatic mission in Havana, and this has normally been the venue where these kind of meetings have taken place. And there's nothing new about this. I mean, U.S. diplomats in Cuba have routinely met with dissidents at the U.S. mission. Now, she came from Washington. She sat in on one of those meetings, or she had one of those meetings. There have been a lot of these meetings at the diplomatic mission. I think it would have been really significant if she had not met with the dissidents. I mean, if you had a U.S. diplomat coming to on such a high-level visit to Havana and not meeting with the dissidents, when the cause of human rights and democracy in Cuba has been so high in the U.S. agenda, for her to have not met with them, I think would have been more newsworthy than the fact that she did meet with
them. But the Cuban government could have prevented them from meeting, couldn't they?
Well, I suppose they could have physically blocked them from going there, but they haven't done that before. And I think the Cuban authorities understood that she really did have to meet with them. And, they were, in a sense, smart enough to not to obstruct that. I mean, they don't stop European diplomats from meeting with dissidents either, for that matter.
Last time you were on the program, we talked about the now infamous ticker.
Mm-hmm.
This was this electronic billboard that the Bush administration set up on the fifth floor of the mission in Havana, displaying pro-democracy messages, leading the Castro government to block the billboard or to set up competing messages across the street. Now, in June, the Obama administration stopped the ticker. Now we have this official spending a week in Cuba and behaving, if I may use this word, more normally in the way that diplomats in this country and in others normally function, attending cultural events, seeing, the various sites accompanied by Cuban diplomats, sometimes yes, sometimes no. But on the one hand, what does it really mean? I mean, the embargo remains in place. The mail service has not yet resumed. What does it really mean?
Well, it means that, as you say, it simply means that the United States and Cuba are behaving more normally. And these are small steps. I think that this step was, from the point of view of those who advocate a change in U.S.-Cuba relations, this one was overdue because there was a lot of expectations and promise introduced back in April when President Obama said he was ready for a new beginning with Cuba, and he told the Cuban people, don't blame me for policies that were put in place before I was even born. And I think that both in Cuba and in the United States, there was expectation that there are going to be a whole series of things. Then, as you say, they turned off the ticker. Actually, I think it was even before June, but they announced it in June or something like that. That's a pretty small development. And then several months have passed with nothing new. So I think there was a sense that it was time for one more step to be taken. So what we're seeing here is a series of steps that are incremental, they are small, but they are all marching in one direction, which is in the direction of normalization of U.S.-Cuba relations. And given the history and the animosity, you know, I think it could be said that these are significant. I mean, I don't, as I say, it's been probably 25 years at least since we had this kind of contact between the United States and Cuba. So that's significant.
The speech by the Cuban Foreign Minister Bruno Rodriguez at the United Nations General Assembly on Monday was, I think, fair to say, kind of overshadowed by other leaders whose performances there received a great deal of attention. But he did say that Cuba has long wanted normal relations with the U.S., and he acknowledged steps that Obama had taken as positive, but he also described them as small. He says that the crucial thing is that the economic, commercial, and financial blockade against Cuba remains intact. How do you interpret that speech? Do you interpret that as a sign of a kind of an openness on the part of the Cubans, or how do you interpret their response?
Well, Michelle, I think, and this is just my own personal opinion, I think there are mixed feelings. I think there's a certain amount of ambivalence on the part of the Cuban authorities about this overture. You know, I go back to 1961 when Fidel Castro wrote that a revolution, a true revolution, needs an enemy in front of it in order to give it identity and vigor. And I think that has been a guiding principle for all these years. In a sense, politically, dynamically, Cuba has needed, in a sense, to have this adversarial relationship with the United States. Now, are they really ready to give it up? Yes, Bruno Rodriguez, the foreign minister, says we are, but at the same time, he sort of belittles the significance of these steps that have been taken. And he says some things that are, I mean, you know, somebody asked him about, Cuban Americans now have the right to travel. And he says, well, that's their constitutional right. Well, it's a right Cubans don't have.
Exactly. I was going to say, yeah, which country were we talking about? And finally, speaking of Cuban Americans, in the minute or so that we have left, what is your sense of domestically how these steps are being viewed? Cuban foreign minister also said in his speech to the UN that the right-wing forces in the U.S. still have too much power in setting Cuba policy. What is your sense here at home? Is there an appetite for change? And if so, on whose part?
There is an appetite for change. And, you know, let me go back for a second to that Juanes concert in Havana, which was a couple of weeks ago. Very controversial. Juanes is a Colombian singer, but he lives in Miami. And he, you know, he was really subject to a lot of criticism for his willingness to do a concert in Havana with the cooperation of the Cuban authorities. Well, just within the last day, a new poll has come out in South Florida showing that a majority of Cuban Americans think that that concert was a good idea, that they support it. Now, this was, I think, twice the number of Cuban Americans think it was a good idea now afterwards than thought it was a good idea before it happened. So it's just one example of the way that attitudes are changing in that community.
And quickly. Mm-hmm. NPR correspondent Tom Gelden, his latest book is Bacardi and the Long Fight for Cuba. He was here with me in our Washington, D.C. studio. Tom, thank you.
Thank you. Anytime, Michelle.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.